ॐ नमः श्रीयतिराजाय विवेकानन्दसूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे. वी हैव बीन एलाबोरेटली डिस्कसिंग दि ज्ञान योग ऑफ स्वामी विवेकानंद. वाई डिड स्वामीजी प्रीच अद्वैत वेदांत? ही कुड हैव प्रीच्ड मेनी ड्यूअलिस्टिक रिलीजियंस. Especially he could have preached the religions which promote devotion. Very curious thought. At the present moment, if you look around, who are the people or who are becoming so popular and attracting millions of people towards so-called religion? If you look, there are certain very special points to be understood. The first point is, very few people are really interested in what we call organized religions. Most of them are attracting people, individuals, and if they could produce some miracles, then there would be lot of people. But if you preach hard Advaita Vedanta, you are God, they will not come. If you preach, you are a worthless sinner, oh, they will be very, very happy to follow you. There is a God, I can guarantee you, He will come and save you. Oh, then they will be very, very happy. In our last class, we said why people thought Jnana Marga is so very difficult to tread. For those with body consciousness, the path of Jnana is very difficult. Second, without having an impersonal attitude, one cannot tread the path of knowledge. Third, if one doesn't have love of knowledge. Fourth, if one doesn't have the courage to follow the convictions of their own intellectual reasonings. Next, those who are intensely emotional. And last, because of the six types of language used in presenting the Advaita Vedanta. And if you recollect, what are they? Dialectical, negative, evocative, analogical, paradoxical and mythical. Then it's very fascinating, interesting subject. In this class, why Swamiji preached Advaita Vedanta? My ideal indeed can be put into a few words, and that is to preach unto mankind their divinity and how to make it manifest in every moment of life. Thus, Swamiji had written to Margaret Noble on June 7, 1896. This is a very interesting point, because every dualistic religion, Christianity or Vaishnavism, Shaktism, Shaivism, Islam, all these religions say only one thing: you depend upon me, we will save you. And the curious thing is, don't go directly to God, because God will give you a blow. Who says? Priest. You will have to go through us. If it is preached that all of us are divine, what is the implication? I am not a born sinner. So I am divine. It is my right, birthright, to reclaim my forgotten divinity. I have forgotten my divinity. That's all. All that sin I am committing is not because I am not divine, but because I have forgotten somehow. I think that I am not divine, and somehow you are also not divine, and so I can cheat you, I can torture you, I can take advantage of you. But if you preach you are divine, you will be forced to admit everyone else is too divine. That way you feel very guilty if you do not practice what you really believe. This is what every religion practically is trying to emphasize. You are weak. You are useless, you cannot attain anything, but only by the grace of God. How does the grace of God come? You have to follow me. Priestism is called priesthood. This is what Swami Vivekananda is telling. Then, very, very interesting topic. Swami Vivekananda states in the Absolute and Manifestation, what does he say? Advaita Vedanta saved India twice in the past. Saved in the past. Before we go further, let us remember, Swami Vivekananda preached Vedanta. If you use that statement, Swamiji preached Vedanta, it can lead to gross misunderstanding. What did he preach? Advaita Vedanta. What is the distinction between these two? Vedanta means it could be dualism, it could be qualified non-dualism, Dvaita and Vishishta Advaita. If he had preached that, it would have been no different between what every religion is doing. But what is the speciality? Advaita Vedanta includes dualism as well as qualified non-dualism. We are going to elaborate why Swamiji preached Advaita Vedanta alone. Here is the answer. He himself points out, this was not the first time Advaita had been given to the people. It had come whenever materialism prevailed. At first, he said, some monks got hold of this Advaita and took it to the forest, and so it came to be called the forest philosophy. By the mercy of the Lord, the Buddha came and preached it to the masses, and the whole nation became Buddhist. Before the Buddha came, materialism had spread to a fearful extent, and it was of a most hideous kind. And that's how Buddha saved Advaita Vedanta, through Advaita Vedanta, saved India. 1,000 years after his death, a similar state of things again prevailed. Then Shankaracharya arose and once more revivified the Vedanta philosophy. He made it a rationalistic philosophy. We want today, Swamiji said in this same lecture, that bright sun of Shankara's intellectuality joined with the heart of Buddha, the wonderful infinite heart of love and mercy. This union will give us the highest philosophy. Science and religion will meet and shake hands. Poetry and philosophy will become friends. This will be the religion of the future. And if we can work it out, we may be sure that it will be for all times and for all people. And Swamiji, the third great giver of Advaita Vedanta. When we say Swamiji, we always in brackets. What? Sri Ramakrishna. When Swamiji was talking, it was Sri Ramakrishna who was talking through him. So Sri Ramakrishna could be Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna could be Swami Vivekananda, and he could be any sincere spiritual aspirant. All of us. The third great giver of Advaita Vedanta to the people. And he had been working it out. Thus has Advaita saved India thrice from materialism. But we have to add, Advaita for the third time saved not only India, but the whole world. Materialism, this was what Swami is telling. Materialism prevails in Europe today. You may pray for the salvation of the modern skeptics, but they do not yield. They want reason. The salvation of Europe depends on a rationalistic religion, and Advaita, the non-duality, the oneness, the idea of the impersonal God, is the only religion that can have any hold on any intellectual people. It comes whenever religion seems to disappear and irreligion seems to prevail. And that's why it has taken ground in Europe and America. What a grand synthesis Swami Vivekananda was anticipating. Whenever we discuss about Swami Vivekananda or Sri Ramakrishna, we have to keep one particular picture in mind. They came not for India, but for the whole world. Whenever any incarnation comes, he doesn't come for any particular region, particular culture, particular local, geographical locality, for particular nation. He comes for the whole world. Not only that, he comes not only for that particular age. His ideas will be the only solution to the problems of life for the next at least 1,000 years. What did Swami Vivekananda do? This is an age of science. And so there is infinite, almost insurmountable conflict between science and religion. I will not go into the details, but it's such a fascinating study how at the end of the 19th century, science had almost vanquished religion. You know, the conflict that had gone between Christianity and science. But such a thing never happened in Hinduism, because Hinduism is predominantly practicing Advaita Vedanta. That is a altogether different subject. What is interesting is, even if you ask a dualist, are you a practitioner of Advaita Vedanta? He would vehemently deny it. But if you probe a little bit deep into it, you will see that he has to admit, though he would not admit it so in so many words, that he is a practitioner of Advaita Vedanta only. Divinity, each soul is potentially divine. Now tell me, which philosophy does it fall under? Does it fall under dualism? No. Does it fall under qualified non-dualism? No. It falls only under one ism. What is that ism? Divine ism. That's what is called Advaita Vedanta. Dualistic religions, by their very nature, cannot accept science. Even today, in America, such ridiculous things are going on. Because, you know, in America, each state has got its own freedom, independence, to think what they like, to introduce into the schools what they like. You know what is the conflict? First of all, you cannot pray to God. Somebody suggested, why not pray, just say, don't say God. Let us pray, may we all be good, may we all be unselfish, may we all be loving each other, may all we be serving each other, may all of us live in harmony together, in peace together, like, you know, Buddhists say, sarve janaha sukhino bhavantu. No. Even this type of impersonal prayer, they don't want. This is one point. Most of you perhaps know about it. The second point, you know, there are some states where there is terrible conflict. What should be taught in the schools? Should it be the creationism of the biblical version or the creation of the science, scientific, Charles Darwin's theory of evolution? Even now, I cannot understand such, supposed to be such an advanced, developed nation. In what way they developed, God alone knows. So development can be up or down also. And where does materialism prevail? No. In which country? Where does it start? Where does Coca-Cola culture start? It is science. It is scientific way of looking at things. And it is the scientific methodology that alone can save religion. What do we mean by science? We all use the word science, scientific, so many words we use. What does it mean to be science? First of all, gather data. Secondly, analyze the data. And thirdly, come to the rational conclusions based upon the data you collected. And that data you collect must be in strictly along scientific collection. You cannot bring about some statements and say, this is science. From that point of view, does any scientist have any right to say God doesn't exist or anything doesn't exist? They can only say, I do not know, or we do not know. Beyond that, if they make any statement, what is it to be called? Unscientific. Yeah. Now, what Swami's greatest contribution is, he says, religion is as scientific as science. But it is a mistake to think that you prove your theory in my laboratory. You know what science says? Mm-hmm. That you prove your God in my laboratory. Through what? Through some of the instruments you measure, you weigh, and all those things. But religion says, we have got our own special laboratory. And that is the laboratory of the mind. You follow, there are teachers who have followed, who realized God, go to them, sit at their feet, take their teachings on faith. This is one of the most wonderful points, you know, Christopher Isherwood brings. Every scientist, when he embarks upon any particular research, do you know how he embarks? It is based upon faith. The hypothesis which he wants to experiment and come to the conclusion is based upon what? Upon faith. Religion is based upon what? Faith. It is as scientific as science. But the laboratory is different. Here the field is life itself. And the experiments are to be done on one's own mind. And what are the chief methods? To be very precise, self-control and self-concentration. Mind focus and mind concentration. These are the only two methods. Why did Swamiji preach Advaita Vedanta? Towards the grand harmony. What is the harmony? Harmony between different yogas, different religions, religion and science, the harmony between householder and monk, and above all, the harmony between reason and faith. These are the important points. Why am I taking such a long time? Because to understand Swami Vivekananda's Jnana Yoga, we need this background. Without that, we will understand something, but we will not understand it in the grandest manner. We should be able to understand it. Now, in the words of Swamiji, let us see what Swami Vivekananda has to say about it. In a letter written to Alasinga Perumal, dated 6th May 1895, Swami Vivekananda wrote a most beautiful letter. First, now I will tell you my discovery. All of religion is contained in the Vedanta, that is, in the three stages of the Vedanta philosophy, the Dvaita, Visishtadvaita and Advaita, dualism, qualified non-dualism and non-dualism. One comes after the other. It is not parallel. It is not like your four-way motor road. It comes one after the other, like three steps. This was what I quoted from Sister Nivedita's introduction to the complete works of Swami Vivekananda. The highest state one can achieve is Advaita, of which Dvaita and Visishtadvaita are like two steps, progressive steps. That's what Swamiji is clearly mentioning here. One comes after the other. These are the three stages of spiritual growth in man. Second, each one is necessary. That means what? You cannot simply jump to the third step without going through the lower steps. That means you cannot even jump to Visishtadvaita right from here. You will have to go through dualism, progress into naturally into qualified non-dualism, and then non-dualism will come. Here, Swamiji is giving this idea. The first stage, that is the Dvaita, applied to the ideas of the ethnic groups of Europe is Christianity. As applied to the Semitic groups, it is called Mohammedanism. The Advaita, as applied in its yoga perception form, is Buddhism. You know why he said like this? Very interesting. Buddhism doesn't accept the idea of, doesn't mention the idea of God. But it accepts one fact. Constantly it is going on the underlying tone. You know what is the law of karma? The wheel of karma follows the footsteps of each one of us. It is following. The Advaita, as applied in its yoga perception form, is Buddhism. You will find that although the philosophy is the same, the Shaktas, Shaivas, etc., apply it each to their own special cult and forms. That is what we call sects. In fact, Swamiji said something very, very important. He said, there are no religions. There is only one universal religion, of which Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Baha'ism, or any ism are only what? Sects. Each one is a sect. Third, that is, preach the philosophy, the spiritual part. Says, preach the philosophy, the spiritual part. Only preach the spiritual part. What a grand advice he is giving. Never interfere in the social part. You know, religion has got so many parts. I am just mentioning how much harm, sometimes good also, can come out of religion meddling with society, Catholic religion. It is messing whether abortion is permitted or not, whether women can use condoms or not. And research has found out millions have been infected directly as a result of Catholic teachings. You shall not abort and you shall not use any of the scientific methods. It should be it's pure self-control you can do it. Is it practical? That means what they are saying, don't take the help of science. Take the help of me. I will bless you. But who will suffer? If a priest blesses us, who suffers? It is blessing for him and it is suffering for me. That's what he is telling. Preach only the spiritual part. Every religion's business is only to preach the spiritual part of it. If people understand what is spirituality, they can adopt it to their own That's why in Hinduism, it's called dharma. Dharma means what? How I can practice spiritual teachings, that method of practicing, putting spiritual precepts in practical form is called dharma. Vedas are divided into two parts. The earlier part is called karmakanda and the later part is called jnana kanda. Why are they divided like that and what do they do? Karmakanda deals with three subjects: dharma, artha and kama. And the later part deals with only one. What is it? Liberation. Realize you are divine. That's what Swami Vivekananda put it in his modern language. Third point, that is, preach the philosophy, the spiritual part, and let people suit it to their own forms, and they can find it out. Four, a real Vedantist must sympathize with all. This is so important a point. A real Vedantist. Who is a real Vedantist? Not a dualist, not a qualified non-dualist, but an Advaitin. He should sympathize. Now, what is the practicality, what is the day-to-day example? Every religious follower of religion hates the others. You know, all the conflict that is going on after the president of the USA, you know, banning and all those things. What is it? It's all, ultimately, it is all traced to what? Misunderstood, misapplied idea of religion. That's what Swami Vivekananda says. If we can sympathize, then only we are Vedantists. Otherwise, no. If anybody is sympathizing, can he do any harm with others? A sympathizing attitude, can it do any harm to anybody? Do you know what my idea is? By preaching the profound secrets of the Vedanta religion in the Western world, we shall attract the sympathy and regard of the mighty nations, maintaining forever the position of their teacher in spiritual matters, and they will remain our teachers in all material concerns. One of the most important idea in economics. What is it? Swami Vivekananda divided the whole world into two. Spiritual development and material development. And you have to think to accept it. And God divided the whole world into two and said, this part of the world will develop materialistic improvements. And this part of the world will develop into spiritual ideal. Both are necessary. Paravidya is necessary as well as aparavidya. Lower knowledge as well as supreme knowledge. Both are necessary. Without one, the other one will just perish. India has got that spiritual ideology. Plenty of this Advaita. That's what is meant is Advaita Vedanta. And the West has got all the best ideas, science, etc., how to improve one's material life. Now, do not misunderstand by material life, materialistic attitude. These are two entirely separate ideas. You can be very rich, you can be very spiritual. You can be very poor, and you can be very, very materialistic. Many people confuse you now. To have many things is to be a worldly person. No. Even Sri Ramakrishna lived in the world only. If Sri Ramakrishna lives in the world, what should we call him? A worldly person. But he is not a worldly person. He is in the world, but not of the world. That's what we have to keep in mind. This exchange, mutual exchange. I give you what I have, and you give me what I do not have. This is how we sympathize, we cooperate, we become harmonious. Both of us will get the benefit. By the preaching of this universal religion of Vedanta, a religion which gives equal rights to acquire spirituality to men of all creeds and all paths of religious practice, the civilized West would come to know what a wonderful degree of spirituality once developed in India and how that is still existing. Part of the above mentioned idea of Swamiji. Why? Because today, because of sophistication, we are deceiving each other with words. Previously, it used to be called undeveloped countries and developed countries. And then these people felt, oh, it is too nasty a word, undeveloped countries. Now, what did they change into? Developing countries. Ah, wonderful word. Mean the same thing. Sixth, it is weakness, says the Vedanta, which is the cause of all misery in this world. Weakness is the one cause of suffering. I am quoting Swami Vivekananda's letter to let us not forget, Alasinga Permal. Still, it is weakness. What does Advaita Vedanta preach? Anything but strength. Anything but strength. What does every dualistic religion, how does it start? It says, you are a sinner, you are weak, you are stupid, you are an idiot, and I am here, don't worry, you pay me money and I will save you. You go to anywhere, any religion. This is the ultimate this thing. That's what he is telling. It is weakness which is the cause of all misery. And he goes on into ecstasies. It is because of weakness we kill. Because of weakness we cheat. Because of weakness we lie. Poetic language. I'm not going to go into it. 7. Realization of love comes to none unless one becomes a perfect Advaitin. Doesn't the Vedanta say Brahman is Satchidananda, Sat, Chit, Ananda, the absolute existence, knowledge and bliss? So what is Advaita Vedanta? The religion of love. What is love? To look upon everyone as myself is called love. 8. The caste system is opposed to the religion of Vedanta. Caste is a social custom. A question has often been mooted. But is India is a country divided by castes. Most often it is the Indians who raise this question and say, how can we get rid of casteism? How can you get it? By law? By passing certain government rules, regulations? No. Previously, the lower class, you know, what we call untouchables, they were the neglected people. Now who are the most cared for people through law? That's why so many Brahmins now formed a Brahmin samaj and adopting themselves into the families of the Shudras to get admission into the medical colleges and all those things. What is Swamiji saying? That the caste system is opposed to the religion of the Vedanta. When Swamiji says religion of the Vedanta, what does he mean? Only Advaita Vedanta, not dualism. Because it is all because of Dvaita, Visishta Advaita ruled India for nearly 20 centuries. And what was the result? Touch me not. The religion has entered into the kitchen. Cooking pot has become the god. Advaita Vedanta alone can remove the idea of caste. Interestingly, when Sri Ramakrishna was asked how to get rid of caste system, what did he say? He said caste can be got rid of only by one way. If you become a devotee, then you get rid of caste. He said there are only two castes in the whole world, devotees and non-devotees. What a terrible idea of casteism, because every devotee looks down upon the non-devotee and says, you are going to enter into hell and live there forever. What does Sri Ramakrishna mean? He did not mean non-devotees are going to go to hell. He meant the only thing that can remove caste distinction is devotion to God. So what does it do? No devotee would ever say, I am a devotee and you are a non-devotee. Every devotee will say, you and me both are children of the same God. It is the non-devotees who divide the whole universe into devotees and non-devotees and create a problem. Advaita Vedanta is the only answer to get rid of caste system. Now, is there a caste system in the West? It was. They don't call it caste, but do they call it class system? But now, thanks to modern education, especially science, I see that everybody, you know, treats everybody else as equal, more or less. 9. The first step for the pure Vedantist is to be fearless. Abhi. Weakness has got to go before a man dares to become a Vedantist, and we know how difficult that is. What is Advaita? To be fearless. 10. The idea of Vedanta is to harmonize all. Wherever there is a division, harmonize it. Because every division is good. 11. The Vedanta recognizes the reasoning power of man a good deal, although it says there is something higher than intellect. But the road lies through the intellect. There are people who believe that reason and faith are opposite to each other. What did Sri Ramakrishna preach? Faith is the first stage. Faith must go through the furnace of reason, intellect. Only then it becomes strong, otherwise no. But true religion, true spirituality doesn't stop with reason. It goes far beyond intellect, intuition. But at the same time, you cannot bypass reason and say whatever I believe, and that is the highest truth. Then what happens, you know, this faith degenerates into superstition. That's why he said faith and reason must go hand in hand. Faith without reason will be superstition. And reason without faith is a dry matter. It doesn't help anybody. 12. It has now become fashionable to talk about the power of positive thinking. This is exactly what Swami Vivekananda wanted everyone to know. This is Advaita, this is spirituality. Very interesting point. These days, whether it is books, whether it is preachers, what is it that attracts people? As a simple example, have you heard the book Power of Positive Thinking? I think was it by Norman Vincent Peale? Yeah. It's a very good book, excellent book. So he says, if you are a believer in God, the first thing that should happen to you is, you must, your whole thinking should be very positive. What is Vedanta? The moment a person says, Vedanta preaches me that I am divine, the whole attitude will become very positive type of attitude. If that doesn't come, and if I go on reading books, then it is not Advaita. That means you have not understood anything about it. It is to bring about this emotional maturity, that what Swamiji what desired. Emotional maturity is a wonderful word. I will dwell upon it just very, very briefly. What exactly what Swami Vivekananda is telling, if you do not develop power of positive thinking, then your Vedanta study is absolutely not only useless, it may lead you to dyspepsia. Every devotee of God turns to the other idea. It is wonderful world. God has made such beautiful food. I want more food and I want to enjoy it. Very positive idea. What am I talking about? Enjoy this world. What is the meaning of renunciation? Not giving up the enjoyment, but giving up the attachment to the enjoyment. There is a world of difference between these two. Sri Ramakrishna was always joyful. His whole life, if you read gospel from a different angle, every moment he was joyful. A beautiful singer, musician has come. He was very joyful. Today there is going to be a feast. And if somebody is preparing a feast, food, he will be very joyful. Today, the devotee is going to feed us. What is the problem with us? The problem is, we also enjoy it. But our problem is, I want it again. What would Sri Ramakrishna say? If it is available as mother's prasada, I will have it. And if it is not available, whatever is available is absolutely fine. That is the distinction between him and us. What is Advaita Vedanta? Pure power of positive thinking. Just think about it now. This then is the ultimate meaning of Vedanta. It is the quest for spirituality. It is the religion beyond all religions, the essence of knowledge that frees us from ignorance, bondage and existential suffering. Understood thus, Vedanta has global relevance because it cuts across religious, racial and national borders and addresses our concerns as human beings. Some special points to be remembered. First, what is the methodology, the method of sadhana in Advaita Vedanta? As I mentioned previously, if you are a devotee of God, what is the methodology? You will follow Ramanujacharya's 7 points. Viveka, Vimoka, Abhyasa, Kriya, Kalyana, Anudharsha, etc. But what is, according to the normal understanding, 3. Shravana, Manana and Nididhyasana. What were people doing previously? They go into the forest and they take up these Upanishads and then they go on hearing it for a long time and then sit, close their eyes and meditate, and afterwards they are supposed to transform those ideas into living ideals. Bhava Parivartana. But then Swami Vivekananda has introduced something called service. Our very motto, Atmano Mokshartham Jagat Hitayacha. This is directly born from the interaction of Swami Vivekananda with Sri Ramakrishna. How was it born? I'll mention one or two points here. The first is, one day Sri Ramakrishna was expounding the Vaishnava doctrines. There are 3. Name, Ruchi, delight in the name of God. What is the second one? Vaishnava Seva. Service to, for whom? Service only for other devotees belong to your religion, your sect. But if somebody else comes, kick him out. But the third thing, jive daya, all other fellows are to be looked down compassionately. You know the story. Ramakrishna was expounded the first two, he said yes. The third one, then he went into ecstasy and then he came out and said, no, not compassion. But Saru man looking upon him as God, Shivagnane Jiva Sheva. And that day, Swami Vivekananda, Narendranath, a would-be monk, was present. And he came out and said, today I have understood the greatest truth, how Advaita Vedanta can be reconciled with every other doctrine in the world. And what is the doctrine? Atmano Mokshartham Jagadhitaya. One's own liberation coupled with service to humanity. Why am I mentioning this? Because in the past, if you go to any monk, they will be retiring. First, they will look down upon all householders. Householders do not exist in the eyes of the previous Advaitins. It is completely not correct. The householders exist at three times. Breakfast time, lunch time, and dinner time. Other times they don't exist. Swamiji saw, he studied it. And then he said, this is the highest stupidity manifest in man. If you are divine, what is Advaita Vedanta? You are divine. If you are divine, the whole universe is divine. Each soul is divine. Is a householder so degraded? Can a householder attain to liberation? Yes. Anybody can attain. Previously, our whole life will go in Shramana Manana, so-called Shramana Manana Nididhyasana. And Swami Vivekananda said that you will not be able to do it successfully. Means you won't even hear properly. You won't even to be able to think deeply, and much less you will transform your life. Unless your life is transformed by another phase previous to this hearing and thinking. What is that previous phase? I told you. Veda is divided into two parts. And the earlier part is a preparation for the later part. Chitta Shuddhi, purity of the mind. Through doing Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga. Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga. What happens? I said three things will happen. First of all, the mind gets expanded. Second, the mind gets purified. Third, the mind becomes focused. These are the three results of performing Karma Yoga and Upasana. And the whole earlier part of the Vedas is devoted only to developing these three characteristics. Only such a person is what we call in Vedanta Adhikari, an eligible person to enter into true religion. This applies to every path. Whether you are a devotee or Karma Yogi or Raja Yogi or Jnana Yogi, this foundation has to be there. That's what Swami Vivekananda said. Why did Swami Vivekananda introduce Seva? Is it a new concept or is it a reintroduction of Purva Mimamsa? Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga? It is a reintroduction in a new format. What is that new format? Previously that ashrama system was there. Now there is no ashrama system at all. There is, how many ashramas are there now? Only two. Householders and monks. How many monks are there? Very few monks are there. Most of the people are householders. Will they get to spiritual progress or not? They need to get. That is why it is possible to progress in spirituality only when there is the foundation of these three. Purity of the heart, expansion of the heart, and perfect concentration. And that cannot be achieved without Karma Yoga. Interestingly, I will put it in a slightly different way. What is Karma Yoga? Karma Yoga means to attain to emotional maturity. What is emotional maturity? That whatever you can do, with the best of your capability, you do it. But what consequences follow because of that? You accept them with equanimous mind. It's called sthita prajna. And that is what is called, you understand what I am talking about? That is necessary even to fly off. It is a takeoff point. You know, every satellite is a takeoff point. So this chitta shuddhi, purity of the heart, mind, is the platform from which one takes off to the spirituality, towards God. Very, very interesting point. And then Swami Vivekananda also introduced Jnana Yoga as a practical yoga. What is the Karma Yoga? Shiva Jnana Jiva Seva. It is Jnana Yoga in practice. Very interesting incident was there. Once Sri Ramakrishna was smoking a Hubble Bubble and Narendranath was present. After smoking a little bit, Sri Ramakrishna with his own hands was trying to put it into the mouth of Narendranath. And Narendranath, by that time, he understood the purity of Sri Ramakrishna and he was not willing to take. He could have taken it, but he was hesitating because Swami Vivekananda knew how pure Sri Ramakrishna's body was. It would react to any type of impurity. And you have to understand, who preached each soul is potentially divine?
Mm-hmm.
Who preached? Swami Vivekananda. At that time, Narendranath used to consider himself, I am not that pure, I am not fit. Sri Ramakrishna's hands will touch my lips. Then Sri Ramakrishna forced into it and said, even now, so much of differentiation, you and me are exactly one and the same. What do these words mean? They are words for us. But for Swamiji, they are not words. They are experience of Advaita Vedanta. So many facets are there. Whatever Swamiji preached, all because of his experience with Sri Ramakrishna, wandering all over the world, etc. Then, one of the greatest things why Swami Vivekananda preached Advaita Vedanta. Before Swamiji, there was this terrible impediment called Adhikaravada. Advaita should be preached only to very few fit aspirants who are endowed with sadhana, chitushtaya, sampatti. Otherwise, out. Swamiji said, no, I want to reject this. It is not the preaching. It is to reject this idea you are fit and you are not fit. According to Swamiji, everyone is fit. Even a baby is fit. Even a child is fit. A student is fit. A fisherman is fit. A housewife is fit. How do you reconcile it? He says, they will take as much as they can. What is your headache? So only they have to finish their MSc or MA and then enter into PhD. Real PhD. What is that? Permanent head damage. Swamiji changed the whole idea and said, if you preach Advaita idea to every child, then he may not understand it as Sri Ramakrishna understands it. But he may not understand it even as Swami Vivekananda understands it. But he will understand it better than what he understood before, is it not? So why should we withhold a person hearing these great truths? Who says that they will not understand? If you believe each soul is potentially divine, you will have to believe they have the power to understand. Only if you don't believe each soul is potentially divine, then only you reject and say, this fellow is absolutely a born idiot, he is never ever going to understand. What a grand ideology Swami Vivekananda was presenting. So this privilege, this adhikaravada, fitness, then only he will be preached, brought so many evils into Advaita Vedanta system before Swami Vivekananda. Okay, you all know that story. Sri Ramakrishna also mentions it. None other than the grand teacher of Advaita Vedanta. Who was the greatest teacher of Advaita Vedanta? Shankaracharya. And then what happened, you know, one day he was walking in Varanasi. And an untouchable with four dogs. He was coming opposite to him, walking towards Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya was okay. He was a Bharat Brahmin. He claims himself to be an experiencer of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, Aham Brahmasmi. Yes, he was preaching, he was writing books all about Aham Brahmasmi. As soon as he came, this untouchable came. Dhuram Apasarare Chandala. Hey Chandala, get out of my path. That Chandala wanted to give a slap Shankaracharya. What did he say? Sir, you argue with me, because only argument will win over Shankaracharya, nothing else. He said, of whom you are addressing, you are an untouchable. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the bodies? What is the difference between my blood and your blood? And if you are talking about Atman, then what is the difference between your Atman and my Atman? And Shankaracharya, being Shankaracharya, immediately he opened his eyes and he saluted and said, you can be none other than Shiva. Shiva himself. But I have got a little masala to add to it. Supposing he comes to know this wisdom came not from Lord Shiva, but the Chandala. First point, if such a wisdom could come from the mouth of a Chandala, is he a Chandala or is he a Shiva? Secondly, supposing he is a Chandala, will Shankaracharya have accepted that teaching? You know, his followers even today, they are all Dooram Apasarare Chandala followers. Yeah, they will not allow you. They will throw prasada from a distance so that they will get polluted. And I also accept the prasada, lest I should get polluted by their touch. This is happening everywhere. That's why Swami Vivekananda said, and his life experiences also have confirmed that faith in him. Everybody is potentially divine. Therefore, they have a right. You give the teachings. What do you lose? After that, they will understand when they are ready to understand it. Then orthodox version versus modern version. Orthodox version, what we discussed of Advaita Vedanta. What is modern version? That you can be a devotee, you can be Advaita Vedanta. You see, you understand why Swami Vivekananda preached Jnana Yoga in the West. Are the Western people really fit according to the orthodox people? But according to Swamiji, who is a Western man or a woman? He is also a child of God only. And if he is a child of God, he is 150% fit for it. So give him the ideas. He will absorb it in his own way. He will become a better person. This is called power of positive thinking. Give him these positive ideas. Never say you are a sinner. Interestingly, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, that wretch who goes on repeating, I am a sinner, in course of time, what do you think he will become? But that person who says, I am a sinner, but I am going to become a better person. Who has got better chance to become better? That's what Swami Vivekananda says. All are fit to practice any yoga. All are fit to hear any type of Vedanta, including Advaita Vedanta. Then, last point, very briefly I will mention to you. Difference between Ramakrishna order and traditional followers of Jnana Marga and Bhakti Marga. Very briefly. I might elaborate it in my future classes. So we are all followers of Shankaracharya's Advaitic Sampradaya, Dakshinami Sampradaya. But are we same like the other followers? And we are not followers of Ramanuja's Madhava's Sampradaya, tradition. But are we different from them? There are similarities, there are differences. Sri Ramakrishna said, the last word of spiritual progress is Advaita. That's why his famous saying, Advaita Gyan Anchale Bende Jai Cha Tai Koro. Tie the knowledge of Advaita in the corner of your wearing cloth and then do whatever you like because you will never fall down again. Advaita is our goal. But is the path of knowledge our path? No. What is our path? Devotion coupled with service. Bhakti, Yoga and Karma Yoga, this is our main path. Our path is Bhakti Yoga and Karma Yoga. Our goal is Advaita. We agree with Shankaracharya's followers. You also want Advaita and I also want Advaita. But we differ. According to you, only the path of knowledge is the only path. But for us, any path will take you to the same goal. As I mentioned in my first talk, that this problem comes because of the inability to discriminate between Jnanam and the path of Jnanam. We will have occasion to talk about it. Knowledge, that is knowledge of God, is ultimate goal. That's called Advaita. But the path of knowledge is a path. It is not the goal. Like it is like any other path, Bhakti Marga or whatever it is. How do we differ from Ramanuja Madhvacharya? We accept their path of sadhana, but we disagree with their goal. Their goal is to go to Vaikuntha or Kailasa. Our goal is to attain oneness with God. We differ with regard to the goal, but we agree with regard to the path. This is the main distinction the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna must always keep in mind. We will now start the actual discussion of Jnana Yoga from our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.